Blog Talk Radio.
Marked by, we're now 1 month and 8 days in, we have lost a lot of musicians, last week it was Maurice White, Earth, Wind & Fire, Paul Kantner, people who are familiar with Jefferson Airplane, beginning of the year, Natalie Cole. We've lost two classical music, one classical music conductor, I think one at the end of last year, Kurt Masur, David Boulez. Like I said, Maurice White of Earth, Wind & Fire last week. And I mean, that's just memories of so much great music. And the Eagles, my favorite slow jam, one of my top favorite slow songs of all time. I can't tell you why. The Eagles, Glenn Frey, passed away about 2 weeks ago. It's really been quite a year marked by musicians of all people. It's been remarkable. But here we are. It's good afternoon. It's February 8th, 2016. My name is Lewis Kincaid, and the show is called Lewis Kincaid with the Runaround. This is the day after the Super Bowl, so I definitely want to talk about that today. I'm going to start with a lot of the news over the weekend. My goodness, the political news for the weekend has been crazy. The Republicans had a debate Saturday night, and it was seen as Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, having a literal meltdown. But I don't know if he had a meltdown. Now, what had happened was, is last week, Governor Christie from New Jersey was definitely attacking Marco Rubio for being kind of a lightweight and constantly saying the same things over and over, having his little two-sentence sound bites, and he couldn't go beyond that. He didn't speak off the cuff very well. You ask him a question, he has to go to a sound bite. You ask him another question, he uses that sound bite again. Literally Saturday night during the debate, he played out what he had been criticized about. He kept talking about how President Obama is meaning to do the things he does. He's not doing these things by mistake. He kept using President Obama as his foil, Marco Rubio. And the interesting thing about that is, one, well, the most important thing really is President Obama is not running. And it really looked like, well, you know, you use it once. So he used it once. So President Obama is not doing this by accident. He's really meaning to do what he's trying to do to the country. He's changing the country. He said it again 2 minutes later. He said it again 5 minutes later. And then Governor Christie was saying, listen to him. He just keeps saying the same thing. You could literally hear the audience laughing. Marco Rubio was developing flop sweat. I mean, he was literally like sweating on air. And he used this line about five times over the course of about 2 hours. But I think there's a method to Marco Rubio's madness, because we also found out that 24 hours after the debate Saturday night, he got his best 24 hours of fundraising. Now, why would that be? Why would that be? I think the reason why is because there is a cadre of Republicans who are voters who just don't like our current president. They really don't like him. So anytime you mention him, it gets their hair raises on the back of their neck. And obviously, it also loosens up their pocketbook. So Marco Rubio didn't look good. I think right now, based on press and his other competitors, he looked really bad. But he may have a method to his madness. He keeps mentioning the President Obama, but he has to remember something. He's not running against President Obama. The president can't run anymore, so Marco Rubio better watch out. He really does seem lightweight. There was a lot of Republicans over the last year or two that were comparing him to President Obama, because the president, when he was a senator, was only a senator for less than four years. He was new to the office of senator, and all of a sudden now he wants to run for president. He doesn't have enough experience, Now, fast forward 8 years, now we have Marco Rubio trying to do the same thing. So there are people who like him. There are also people who criticize him because they don't believe he is ready. I will tell you right now, as much as I may have thought that then-Senator Obama was a little young and green to try to step into the office of the presidency, he was better. He had a better background of the issues. He could talk about his belief that we should have health care. He had a reason for being against then-Senator Clinton for being voting for the war in Iraq. He had and he could speak off the cuff. Marco Rubio does not seem to be able to speak off the cuff. So he is going to be, the thing that Marco Rubio has going for him are there's some deep pockets over in the Republican Party, big donors who want to find someone to beat Donald Trump. Because one of the things, the dirty little secret is Donald Trump is not owned by anyone, as best as we can tell. We don't know yet. This is to be determined later, but as best as we know, and what Donald Trump is always mentioning is that I don't need anybody's money. I'm on my own. Well, first of all, Donald Trump is receiving lots of small cash donations from people who like him, and he is using that money. So let's just put that aside, that he's only using his own money. He's not only taking in donations from people, he's also loaning his campaign money from his businesses. He's going to eventually have to pay back. Down the road, we'll have to worry about that. So the New Hampshire primary is tomorrow, Tuesday. I'll be back on Wednesday and find out what the results are. It looks like Donald Trump is getting ready to win his first primary. It really does. He did a pretty good job Saturday night. You know, treating Jeb Bush. He treats Jeb Bush like just a child. You know, last week it was Barbara Bush comes out to campaign for her son, and Donald treats, you know, he had to bring his mommy out to help him. His mommy, you know, 50, 60-year-old man talking about you need your mommy's help. Ooh, that's not good. That's just not good. So Donald Trump did well Saturday night. He totally neutered Ted Cruz, Senator Cruz from Texas, who had his own issues. He had a little mini scandal from last Monday during the Iowa caucus. There was a CNN report, and this is between Ted Cruz and Dr. Carson, Ben Carson. There was a CNN report last Monday evening, while the Iowa caucus was going on, that said Dr. Carson was going to be spending some time in the next week down in Florida. He was going to get away from the political campaign for a few days. did not state that he was leaving the race. Just he was going to be going to another state and taking some time, a few days off. Ted Cruz and his campaign took that report, gave it to his volunteers, and they started making phone calls that Monday night. I mean, this is immediately, right after they hear the report on CNN, and they're calling people saying that Dr. Ben Carson is going to be leaving the race. He's leaving the race. Now, why would he do that to Dr. Carson? They found out through polling, Ted Cruz, that the people who were voting for Dr. Carson, if they didn't vote for Carson, their next choice would be, voila, Ted Cruz. So he pushed all the buttons and got contact with all the people who were Carson supporters. Remember, the caucuses are where you're getting a big haul. You're not voting by yourself, you know, ballot privacy, all to you're amongst a group of people in a room, and you're bartering and speaking for your candidate, and somebody else says something for their candidate, and then you end up counting the numbers on a piece of paper. It's really back 18th century style way of voting, and it has some issues with accuracy, as we found out on the Democratic side. But Ted Cruz did this. So Saturday night, Dr. Carson brought this up, charged Ted Cruz with it. Ted Cruz again tried to apologize, but he didn't set the record straight. He said, well, CNN came out with a report, but then they came out with a report later, which they did not. He lied. And he tried to cover his backside, and he did a pretty bad job of it. So I think what's going to happen in New Hampshire tomorrow is Donald Trump's going to win. But who's going to be second and third is really up in the air right now. And one of the things about the state of New Hampshire is this is primary season. Normally, if you're a Republican, you vote in a Republican primary. Democrats vote in a Democratic primary. Well, in New Hampshire, you can be registered as a Republican or registered as a Democrat or be an independent, but you can vote in either primary. You can't vote in both, but you can pick. So you can be registered as a Republican, but say, you know what, I think today I'm going to vote in the Democratic primary, and you can do that. Or if you're a Democrat, you say, well, I'm a Democrat, but I think just today I'm going to vote in the Republican. So you can pick your ballot in the primary, where normally you have to stay with whatever party you've declared when you register to vote. So that really, you know, if a Democrat says, you know what, you know, I think Bernie and Hillary, they'll kind of take care of themselves, but I want to get over here in this Republican race because it looks a little more juicy. Let's see what we can do. So all the polling of who's first, who's second, who's third, who's fourth, it's pretty accurate, but let's see who's going to vote. Like I said, Donald Trump is first, but then you have Ted Cruz, who was first in Iowa. Then you have Marco Rubio, Mr. Flop Sweat. Then you got the governors. You have Governor Christie, you have Governor Kasich, and you have former Governor Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush is looking pretty bad right now. He needs a big, big push. They say he's doing a little bit better the last few days, but he needs a push. He probably has enough money that if he wants to continue on after this primary to South Carolina, he can make it, where he is supposed to be much stronger. But between Governor Kasich and Governor Christie, whoever ends up fifth out of this group of five, it may be over for him. And it's looking like it's going to be either Christie or Kasich. Kasich looked like the kindly uncle who was just happy to be there Saturday night, and he would be an excellent vice presidential choice. He comes from the state of Ohio. No Republican has ever won the presidency, I believe, in the modern era. Since 1900, and it may be in history, but certainly since 1900, no Republican has won the presidency without winning the state of Ohio. And the state of Ohio has been going Democratic the last few cycles. And let's remember, when in regards to the presidency, five out of the last six elections, Democrats have won the popular vote. So Obama, President Obama twice. The one was 2004. Bush won that one. 2000, the popular vote was won by Al Gore, but we all know about the Florida Chad stuff. And then the two elections with Clinton. So that's 1, 2, 3. And then 4, 5 with our current president. That's five out of the last six popular vote wins for the Democratic Party. So there's still a lot to do there. So we'll see what happens tomorrow night with the Republicans. On the Democrat side, and it has certainly gotten interesting this weekend, because you have Bernie Sanders, who's now a rock star. He's Senator Sanders from Vermont is a rock star, the socialist who wants to now be a Democrat and is running for president. He has been getting crowds as big as Donald Trump has been getting crowds. And he was on Saturday Night Live Saturday night. He literally won the Iowa caucus. Secretary Clinton won it by 0.25 of 1%. I mean, they're literally tied. And Senator Sanders has a following, and it seems to be growing, or certainly right now has a lot of momentum. He's from Vermont. This primary is New Hampshire, right next door. He has been in the lead up to 30 points as of a week ago. It seems to have closed. New Hampshire, Hillary Clinton won in 2008. Her husband won it both times, 92 and 96. Well, excuse me, in 92, he lost, but he made such a late push to become second. He made it sound like he was the comeback kid, because that was when, at that time, back in 92, when we started understanding the Clinton scandal machine. So that all came out, and I believe that was a 60 Minutes interview, but I'm no Tammy Wynette making cookies for my man, that whole thing. That was New Hampshire primary 92. Bill Clinton didn't win it. I believe it was Paul Tsongas, because he's from Massachusetts. But Bill Clinton made it sound like that night coming up second was like winning. So New Hampshire has always been behind the Clintons. She's making a late rush. We've had some things this weekend that I have some strong feelings about, and it's in regards to some quotes that Gloria Steinem, a woman's icon since the 60s, and Secretary Madeleine Albright, who was Secretary of State for Bill Clinton back in the 90s. I believe she was the first female Secretary of State. These two women made some comments over the weekend. Gloria Steinem's comments were the reason that young ladies under 30 were voting for Bernie, because that's where the young boys are, the younger under 30 guys who are voting for Bernie. The women are under 30 are voting for Bernie because that's where the boys are. Ouch. Ouch. Shouldn't have said that. She walked it back a little bit. And she acknowledged that, you know, the younger women are voting for Bernie because of the belief system that Bernie has, especially his economic views of railing in Wall Street, and that Wall Street is a fraud. The business model of Wall Street is a fraud. He came out with that one. Like I said, I think that's going to hurt him long term. And his views on health care. And Madeleine Albright came out with a statement, and I believe they ended up being together at some point over the weekend when they were stumping for Secretary Clinton. She said this before. She's been saying this for 15, 20 years, so it's nothing new. But Madeleine Albright has always said women should support women. There's a special place in hell for women who don't support women. She has said this for 20 years, so it's nothing new that she's saying this now. But now she's saying it in regards to Hillary Clinton. And women should be voting for Hillary because she's a woman. I can't speak for women. I'm a man. Promise, I really am. Someday I'll show you. No, not like that. My face. But I don't think you can go, I did not, let's change the model. Let's change the person. Instead of Secretary Clinton and women should vote for her because she's a woman, should black people vote for President Obama because he's black? I didn't feel like that in 2007, 2008. Personally, I voted in the primaries. I was a supporter of Hillary Clinton's before I was a supporter of the then Senator Obama. I knew her. I knew, obviously, her husband, like their administration in the 90s. I thought she did a decent job as senator for the state of New York. And I thought she had the background to be a president. understood why she voted for the war in Iraq. I was against the war in Iraq, but I knew why she did it. Understood. She would have been tarred and feathered worse if she would have voted against the war at that time. As just a weakling, a dove who does not support the country. If you remember, back in 2002, there was a lot of people, if you're not with us in this war, you're against us. You're for the terrorists. So I get, you know, if anybody remembers the Dixie Chicks, okay? So I understand why then Senator Clinton did what she did. But I don't know if there should be a loyalty oath pressed on women to vote for her because she's a woman. Secretary Clinton is going to need to come out with some policies. Now, what she also needs is she needs her husband to stump for her. I'm of the absolute belief she does. Secretary Clinton, I believe, will be a better president than she is a campaigner. She tends to scream. She doesn't mean it, but she does. It comes off as a scream, and it just, when she's getting all fired up in it, it sounds a little different. And I'm not making that sexist again. I'm for her. I want her to win, but use the best advantage you have. And I'm sorry. I know she does. She wants to do it on her own, but your husband is the president of explaining things, like the current president said. The current president is right. Because he could have used them for explaining some things, and he did, as it turned out. He helped in the reelection in 2012. And Bill Clinton this weekend came out with he's succinct. The thing about him, you can agree with him, disagree with him, don't like him because of the scandals, the women issues, da 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 da. Got it. But in terms of politics and explaining things, he gets to the point. So he has now started making some attacks on Bernie Sanders. And I think one statement he made that really it's going to start getting to it, because we have a long way to go in terms of the primaries. And he said about Bernie Sanders, when you're making a revolution, you can't be too careful with the facts. Whoa. Okay. You know, because Bernie Sanders is about revolution. Let's break up all the banks. Wall Street is a fraud. We got to turn this stuff over. The 1% no longer needs to be controlling 60, 80, 90% of the income. Break it all up. Let's start over. Give the power back to the people. He wants a revolution. Bernie Sanders has used the word revolution. So Bill Clinton synthesizes other people's arguments, and he comes back with just that knife scalpel cut that gets right to it. When you're making a revolution, can't be too careful with the facts. Wow. And he also made the statement that anybody that doesn't agree with me is a tool of the establishment. That's Clinton referring to Sanders, which makes the point that Bernie has made it. If you're not 100% where I am, then you're just a tool of the establishment. And that can, if you have the right person making the rejoinder, the response, it can be defeated. So I think these two statements made by former President Clinton in his wife's behalf are going to do it. I think they're going to start working. She may not win the New Hampshire primary, but the key is, the thing to look for is to see if she can get under 10%. Like I said, the polls last week had Bernie Sanders up by 30%, like 60 to 30 he was winning, which everyone knew wasn't realistic. The vote was a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month off. Bernie Sanders is the people everyone knows next door. And he was building up all last fall with these 15,000, 20,000 audiences and people roaring for Bernie. Secretary Clinton winning Monday in Iowa. And now in the last week and last few days, the spread is tightening. And there was one that came out today that has her within 7 points. If she gets under 5 points, it'll be between her and former President Bill Clinton fighting to get to the podium first. She won. She actually won. Bill will take a breath and stand to the side. But if she gets within 5 points, now if she totally wins New Hampshire, that it'll be a major upset. It'll be a major, major upset. And speaking of which, the Republicans had their debate on Saturday night. The Democrats had a debate on Thursday night, which I did talk about last Friday. The last two debates for both parties have actually been something that's been interesting for the citizen that's interested in what where are we going in our country politically the next 4 years. They've been illuminating, instructive. So however you vote, and I'm a believer in voting. I've worked the polls since 2002. So that's every primary, every general election, every 2 years. So this spring I'm an inspector. So I'm at the voting spot and I'm making sure that the person that comes up saying they want to vote in California, you do not have to show your ID. But we do make sure that you say this is your name. We look in the book, make sure you're there, the address, you sign it, you go vote. If you're new, then you do have to show some ID and go through a little bit of stuff. And if you say you're in this precinct, but we don't see your name, you can still vote. We have provisional ballots here. I've done it now. This will be my 15th and 16th time. I know it now. I know it pretty well. But I do it because I just have an interest in it, and I think it's a great thing to do. And I'll get paid a lot for it. But, you know, it's easy to take a day off and go do it. And I think it's like that little civic duty that I think is important. So I will be doing that again this year, and we will see what happens tomorrow in the New Hampshire primary. And it should be interesting. It should absolutely be interesting. Let's get to that little sporting event yesterday, the Super Bowl. Denver versus Carolina. Carolina was the big favorite. I tell you, those people in Vegas, they especially the big bettors, the people come in 5-6-7-figure bets. Early betting 2 weeks ago, once Carolina and Denver were known as the two teams in the bowl, was Carolina. 5-point favorite, 6-point favorite, Carolina. And starting beginning of last week, up until the middle of last week, there started to be some Denver money coming in and more people picking Denver. And it just added up. And late money, late, was going toward Denver. The majority of money still was on Carolina, but late money was on Denver. And it's just, I don't believe in conspiracies. What happens is on the field. But what happens is you watch teams over that course of time and people get ideas. I do not believe in conspiracy and, oh, they were bought off or it was a setup or the referees had it in. The referee in the game yesterday has done – yesterday was the fifth game he had refereed for Denver. He is 5-0. Denver is 5-0 when he was the referee. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. It all comes down to the two teams playing on the field. I played this game and watched this game too long. I'm not buying the conspiracies. What happened on the field yesterday is the Denver Broncos beat the Carolina Panthers, and the primary reason they beat them, in my opinion, two reasons. One, the defense of Denver's was excellent, and they outplayed the Carolina offense. Carolina tried to move the ball a few times. They got down into Denver territory a few times. The thing that Carolina had been able to do all year is have 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 play drives with no mistakes, no fumbles, no turnovers, little penalties, and then score. You know, it's one thing to have a 7, 8, 9, 10 play drive, but then at the end, you can't score. Carolina had been able to have those long drives and score. Even real good teams sometimes have problems making long drives. But normally the best teams are able to do it. The Patriots previous with Brady, Manning before, Russell Wilson with Seattle. You have to be able to move the ball 60, 70 yards every once in a while and score. Carolina had drives yesterday, but when they got down close, interceptions, fumbles. Yesterday they had a false on a 3rd and 4 at about the 15-yard line. The blindside tackle, and I say blindside as in the blindside movie, the movie with the blindside about the football player who got adopted by the family. The actual person plays for Carolina. His name is Michael Oher. OHER. Third and four, Carolina had it on Denver's 15-yard line. Soon fourth quarter. I think it was still 16-10 at that time. Could have taken the lead, and he jumped off sides. And that just it really impacted the game. Made it from third and four to third and nine. They didn't complete it. I think that's when they missed the field goal. Their defense was beyond compare, and also something that sometimes is overlooked, but it always impacts the game. Your kicking game has to be on point. And Denver, between their field goal kicker, he made all of his opportunities. I think he had one field goal, that opening field goal in the game. Let's see. I think they actually had two field goals because they ended up with a touchdown and a two-point conversion at the end. So they had a few field goals. The kickoff person kicked it all the way out of the end zone, so Carolina had few chances to return kickoffs. They usually started at the 20, which is not the greatest field position to start from. And the punter was just absolutely great. Think of football like a board game. And the board game is you're trying to move from one end of the field down to the other end of the field. When you get down to the other end of the field, you get points. Well, obviously, what you want to do is you want to get closer and closer to the other end so that you can score and make your points. When an offense gets stopped, it's always good if you can have a kicker, the punter, who can kick the ball as far down the field as you can so that that other team has a farther distance to go to get down into the scoring range. And that is what happened yesterday with Denver and their punter, Colquitt. He made the right punts at the right time. It is so interesting. I've seen over the years in watching football, when you see a great defensive team, a lot of times the punter on their team is a big part of that because the punter is able to change the field position of a team. So there were times yesterday where I think there were one or two punts where Denver maybe was kicking from their own 20 or 25-yard line, and he had a 50, 55-yard kick. So instead of the ball maybe being at the 30, 35-yard line where Carolina could start, they got the ball at the 20 or the 19. And when you're starting field position is farther back, it makes it harder to score. It just does. Over the course of a year, gather statistics, and the closer you are, the better field position you have when you start with the ball, the more often you tend to be able to score. Now, the interesting thing about yesterday's game is that between the two quarterbacks, Peyton Manning and Cam Newton actually had the better game. Peyton Manning was 1 of 14 in third down conversions. So, again, when you have first down, second down, third down, if you don't make it on third down, normally a team will punt the ball. And third down conversion percentage is a big statistic in the NFL. It's in college, too. So football in general, but it's most certainly in the NFL. And the best teams never do 50%. It's rare that you have a team. In some games, a team will be more than 50% of the time on third down, they'll convert it and make a first down. The best teams in the NFL are about 40%, 45%. It's hard to get over 50%. It's just the odds are on the defense on third down. Peyton Manning yesterday was 1 of 14 on third downs. That's 7%. Cam Newton's team was about 4 out of 14, 4 out of 13. I mean, they were a little bit better against a defense that absolutely stifled them, but at least on third down they were slightly better than Peyton Manning's team. They managed the game is the best thing you can say about Peyton Manning. He managed the game. He had an excellent kicking game. Like I said, the kicker was, I'm now looking at the statistics, the field goal kicker was 3 of 3. He scored 10 points. The punt return was a huge play in the game because of the change in field position on a kick that Carolina had covered. They literally had covered. The guy was looking at him catch the ball and then let him catch it and run, because evidently the Carolina defender thought he made a fair catch signal. You can't touch them if they wave their hand in the air for the fair catch. They can't run it once they wave their hand in the air. You can't hit them. But if they don't put their hand in the air, you get to smack the heck out of him once he catches it. He watched them catch it. I still don't know his name. Number 21 on Carolina. Then literally, like, as he catches the ball, the Denver player, Jordan Norwood, then just moved out of the way like, oh, no, he fair catch. I can't touch him. And the guy runs 61 yards. Huge play in the game, because that kick was down to the 15-yard line. That was a chance for Carolina to tackle them right about there, 15, 16, 17-yard line, hold Denver. They were, after the Denver scored on the first possession of the game, Carolina's defense kind of caught up and started stopping them. They could have stopped them, had Denver kick again, and possibly have Cam Newton and Carolina's offense in better field position to then make a scoring push. But the guy runs 61 yards, so he goes from the 15 to the 24-yard line of Carolina. Huge play in the game. That punt return was a huge play in the game. That is the type of game where you don't need your quarterback to do a tremendous amount, but as long as they don't make – and Peyton Manning had an interception. He was 13 of 23 for 141 yards, one interception, was sacked five times. On the other side, you had Cam Newton, 18 of 41. Had a hard time completing passes, 265 yards, one interception. He was sacked six times, and those sacks were huge. Not only was he sacked six times, the yardage from those sacks were 64 yards. That's over half the field in six plays. It's a 10-yard average on sacks. Peyton's five sacks for 37 yards, 8 yards a play, but it not 60, 64 and 37. That's a big difference. So you have to put your, you know, tip your hat to the Carolina defense, and the kicking game was just excellent. I think besides that punt return, that was huge. I thought that the running back that got hurt for Carolina, Jonathan Stewart, they lost him in the first half. He sprained his knee. He was in one of those piles where you're tackled, but then they bend you backwards. So you twist your knee or your ankle. And he was out for a while, and there was no running game except for Cam Newton. And at some point, if you don't have a running game, but you have a running quarterback, it's hard to just ask the quarterback to do all the running if your running game is not producing. Now, it ended up Jonathan Stewart came back in the game in the second half. He ran. He scored a touchdown even. But it wasn't the same. The pressure was always on during the day for Cam to do something. And I know people are saying, well, he should have run more. He should have had more running plays for himself. It usually doesn't work. It usually doesn't work when a very capable quarterback who can run the ball loses their running game. Something happens to their runner. Now you're saying, okay, you're a good runner as quarterback, so now you need to do more running. It's tough to do because now the defense knows that too. The defense understands that the running back is out of the game and only the quarterback's running. It makes it difficult. Those constant hits do add up, and I thought it had an impact on the game. And remember, having said all that, with 6 minutes left, it was 16 to 10. There was and Carolina had the ball. They had a chance in this game. Let me speak on a little bit just about the game, because obviously this is an extravaganza, and you got the commercials, which I have not yet seen any of them. So I don't know what was good, bad, different, other. I'm kind of watched the game by myself yesterday, so I didn't watch it live, literally. I watched it a little behind, but I kind of knew what was going on because I kept up online so I can fast forward through the commercials and keep the game going. So saw the music at the halftime. Let's just talk about all the atmospherics. First of all, beginning of the game, I thought the choir was great. God Bless America, great. Lady Gaga, looking forward to her. She looked great. I thought she sang well, Star Spangled Banner. My number one Star Spangled Banner of all time was Whitney Houston, 1991. Super Bowl. It was Buffalo against the New York Giants. You know, beginning of the Gulf, the Desert Storm, the first Gulf War. It was in Tampa Bay, and she just nailed it. That is the Star Spangled Banner of Star Spangled Banners. Marvin Gaye did one for an NBA All-Star Game, too, that was unique because it was different. It was just, he did it in a different syncopation. It wasn't the melodic. It was soulful, let's put it like that, but unbelievable. Trust me, if you look up Marvin Gaye, Star Spangled Banner, and you'll see it's a different style. It got people clapping at the end of it. It was, I mean, during the song, as he was singing it. It was a different way of doing it. Not everyone could ever do it. Only Marvin Gaye could do it because it was Marvin Gaye. But Whitney's, to me, is just the number one. She just sang it. Not a lot of embellishment. She just nailed it. I thought Lady Gaga did okay. I saw her doing it, and I saw the hand gestures that she was doing it. And the first thing I'm thinking is, this is not a show tune. You know, it's not, it's not one of Tony Bennett's songs. She's had this album where she's really, the last year or two, where she's been doing some duos with Tony Bennett, and they've been done well. Great. She has a great voice. She's a great singer. So let's leave that there. There's no doubt about that. It was okay. Just a little show tune-y for me. A little show-tune-y side of the Star Spangled Banner. Everyone does it different. I don't like the American Idol version where someone wants to yodel through it. That I fast forward through. Just sing it. That's the song. If you got the voice, if you can memorize the words, because that's always a challenge with that song. You think you know the words, but then you sing the song and it becomes a challenge. But she did well. She did well. The halftime. I don't know what the criticism is all about the halftime was political, that it was too gay, that there was a homosexual tint to it. I don't get it, other than the colors. But it's festive. It's a Super Bowl. We're watching on color TVs, HD TVs. What? I'm complaining. So, there's always the political cast. Then you had Coldplay. Fine, they did their two songs. We know those songs. They've done them. I like, especially the second one, I like it. Vita Vita is good, but the second song I really like a lot. So that was cool. Then you had, Bruno Mars came on? Got it, Bruno Mars. Beyonce came on. There's this whole issue about Beyonce because I guess she has this new, and I listened to it. There is a new video that she had. I think she brought it out Saturday night. She published it Saturday night online. I think it was on YouTube somewhere. It's called Formation. It is a video that has its backdrop looks of New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina. There was a police car that was partially underwater that she was sitting on top of. So I get it, and I know in the words in the song are definitely a bit of an anthem for blackness. So I can understand, and I've seen some of the things online, people who are pro-police officers thought that it was a slam against police officers. Look, I think that's a little bit too much. I really think it's a little bit too much. Can we please bring out the lyrics of Eric Clapton's I Shot the Sheriff? But I did not shoot the deputy. I mean, really? Come on now. I did not see any over gunplay in Beyonce's video. It was just an attack to have an attack and whatever. And as it relates to Bruno Mars, I'm good with Bruno Mars. He is exciting. He's, you know, the ladies tend to like him. It's fine. Those songs he did 2 years ago, for the most part, same songs. They're energetic. They're up-tempo. I'm telling you right now, this was the 50th Super Bowl. If there's a 75th Super Bowl and Bruno Mars comes out with those songs, kind of limping through with his dance routines, kind of a 21st century James Brown routine, the same songs 25 years from now, I'm cutting it off. I'm calling them on it. Don't do it, Bruno. Don't do it. You've been warned. So, you know, half hour, halftime, it was okay. Jump back to the show, the real show, the football game. The Denver defense, like I said, played out. Cam and his offense was never able to get on track. They moved the ball, turnovers. You just can't say enough. And the most valuable player, defensive end Von Miller, certainly deserved it. After the game, which Denver absolutely earned, Cam Newton was giving his interview, his post-game interview, and was absolutely, obviously, not happy. One-word answers, pretty dejected, sullen, if you will. Didn't have a lot to say, you know, try to make a few comments that, hey, you know, Denver played their game, you know, wasn't anything up with us. We were moving the ball, you know, there's a few times passes were overthrown. There was and that reminds me, there was also a call made in the first quarter of the game that was huge, a 20-yard pass that they said that the Carolina receiver dropped the ball, the Crotchery catch, Jeremy Crotchery. I didn't get that. I never saw the ball hit the ground. What I did see was constant movement of the ball, but it never hit the ground. So, but they're saying that because the ball was constantly moving, he didn't have control. That was a big play because obviously it was a first down catch. Carolina didn't get it, and they had to give up the ball. So, you know, Cam was trying to say, listen, you know, we made turnovers. We didn't move the ball. Cam may have had two overthrows in the first quarter, two bad overthrows. You know, but that can happen in a Super Bowl. I've seen good teams that eventually blew out the other team, Dallas. I think San Francisco had one year where they started the game just, you know, the 49ers, no, they always look like a machine. Yeah, but Dallas, the one year that they blew out Buffalo, came out early, and Buffalo was in the lead early, and Dallas just looked a little jittery. It was the triplets, Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith, Troy Aikman. And they just looked like they weren't going to get it, but they just had to relax. And finally they relaxed, and then they proceeded to win 55-17, something. They blew them out. And that was the game that the Dallas player, the defensive player, is running back a touchdown. And this is after the blowout has been commenced. It's on. Buffalo's not winning this game. And their player, right as the Dallas player is showing the ball to everybody, I'm getting ready to score, and the Buffalo player comes from behind and knocks it out of his hand right before he scored. Steve Tasker, who does a lot of games on TV. And Leon Led was the guy running the ball. So Cam was trying to explain, but he was dejected. He was upset. And then he got up and walked away. And that has caused a lot of discussion. And I watched some of the post game, and I'm so with Deion Sanders. I watched it live as Cam's doing this, and he got up and walked away. I said, "What are you? I know you're upset." And then he walks away, and they're still asking questions, and he just leaves. You can't do it. You can't do that. If you're going to be dejected and not have a lot to say and angry and a man of few words, that's fine. But you got to sit there. That's where you got to take it. You got to take the nasty medicine. You got to take your pills. If you can do the dab and do the dancing and do the everything when you win, this is the flip side. Saturday night, 24 hours before the game, Cam Newton was voted the MVP of the National Football League. You are the man of the league for this year and into postseason now, starting today for the next 200 days until we get back into summer camp in July. You are the NFL MVP. We understand you're not happy. Your team lost. You're the leader of the offense, and you're the face of the National Football League for this point in time because you are the NFL MVP. You can't walk away. Sit there, take it, sullen, few words. I wouldn't like that either because, you know, some of the best news conferences, press conferences are the ones where the player just lost or the team lost and the coach or the players have to sit there and say, hey, we did this. Now, there's been a lot of support for Cam, by saying that, you know, there's been instances where Peyton Manning ran off the field and didn't shake hands, or, you know, Brady did this or that and the other. I understand running off the field after a game and not shaking hands. I think I did it once or twice. I was P.O.'d. I absolutely remember one. I do. Because I could not believe we lost, and I didn't like the other team, and I just wasn't having it. I ran off the field without shaking hands. Normally, you do it win or lose. But, hey, I can get that sometimes. You don't want to deal with them. You don't even want to touch them. Just try to knock their heads off. I don't even want to look at them. So I can get that. I didn't have the opportunity to sit in front of a microphone with dozens of people asking me questions, and the same question you get every 2 minutes. Somebody asks the same thing. You just answered it. Somebody asks it again, and they ask it again, you know, because they want it for their quote. But they didn't hear the other person 5 minutes ago ask the same thing. So he had every right to feel the way he did, but he can't act the way he did. And the difference between those, Peyton and Tom, if they ran off the field and didn't shake hands, that's on feel. I get the field. I get what happens on the field. If you don't want to deal with, you just shed blood out there against a team, you lost. I like what teams do normally at the end, and that should always be. Should always meet in the middle of the field. Coaches shake hands. Players shake hands. That's the way it should be. That's football. That's the way it should be. But sometimes I get it. You don't do it. But the press conference, when you are portraying yourself out into the country, you just can't do it. And I thought he was wrong there. And he'll learn. You know, I mean, I've gotten some good feedback from people today when, you know, it was discussed. And I think, you know, fair-minded people understand whether you're for or against him in this particular game. You know, you say, well, you know what, he'll learn. One of the first things I learned in sports was this attribute of having poise, of whenever things are going wrong or you're being pressured by another team in a sporting context, but you are able to maintain your composure and your response is based on practice. You know what you have to do. You've done it over and over again. The other team is now pressing you, but you're able to perform in a pressurized moment that looks like you're calm. You know, they have that commercial, never let them see you sweat. That attribute I learned from Coach John Wooden at UCLA. He had all the great players. He had great players. Now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Lew Alcindor, then Bill Walton, Sidney Wicks, Michael Warren, Steve Patterson, Curtis Rowe. I mean, he had so many all-stars. Henry Bibby. He had so many all-stars through the years, and his teams always performed at a highly functioning level. They won 88 games in a row at one time when I was in high school. 88 games in a row. So that went over years. You play about 30 games a year in college basketball. The team was always prepared, and because they were always prepared, it meant that they could perform at any time, whether it was no pressure in the game and they were blowing out a team, or whether it was a tight game and the moment called for, can you perform now, or are you going to, as we say, choke up or not be able to make the play? They always seem to be able to make the play more often than not. I mean, we're talking about 10 out of 11 national championships. This team was good over the course of players and the response of the player. And so not only it's what you do during the game, but then it's what you do after the game is over. And Cam, he's going to have to learn from this. He'll get better, but it was something that he needs to learn from. And I hopefully hope he will. I hope he will. He's a stubborn kid. He's done wonderful this year. This was a great year. Now he's got to prove, can he do it again next year? Because other teams now are going to come back at him. So we'll see what happens. That's the end of my hour. I got to just about everything I wanted to talk to today. Although, you know, now that football season is over, now we're going to get to the good stuff now. In terms of sports, it's the baseball Cardinals. And now I'm in. You think I had it at football, and I just started with football. I've only been back a week now on the show. It's going to really get interesting now with the baseball team because I'm a baseball fan. So the weather's getting warm. The weather out here in Southern California has been the best in the last 3 months, the last 2 or 3 days. Gorgeous. So it feels like baseball season. So we're talking about that. Obviously, on Wednesday, I'll talk about the political news and what happened in New Hampshire, who was the winners, who were the losers, anything else that comes up, the postscript of the Super Bowl. And I will end today with what I started with, that beautiful, beautiful song from the Eagles, I Can't Tell You Why. See you Wednesday.
I can't tell you why.